You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. When it opened 25 years ago this week in Baltimore, Camden Yards transformed the landscape of Major League ballparks for a generation. Little did anyone know. The Orioles said they were just trying to build a great little ballpark. What the city got and the country got in Cleveland and Texas and Denver and Seattle and Milwaukee and San Francisco and San Diego, the children of Camden Yards, was a whole lot more than that. It might have even been beyond the imagination of our guest, the longtime highly respected Baltimore sports writer and team historian and official scorer. We welcome Ted Randall's Talking Baseball, Jim Hanneman. Jim, great to have you. First, give us some background about you. Tell us about your roots in Baltimore.
Well, Ed, as you said, I mean, I grew up right behind the Memorial Stadium. As a kid, had a paper route back there, so I really was right into it from the beginning. And in that particular area at the time, there was a lot of debate about where a new stadium should go, if there was a new stadium or a refurbished stadium. So I kind of been through the whole nine yards, and of course, ultimately spending, as I said, I grew up in the backyard of, technically, when we moved there, it was a municipal stadium, and it was not even a baseball park. But that was basically my neighborhood playground when I was a kid.
The Orioles shared a stadium in Northeast Baltimore on 33rd Street with the NFL's Colts. Nothing special architecturally, Jim, but built into the neighborhood where they won three World Series and six pennants, and a beloved place to go to.
It became memorable more, I think, for what happened in it than it did from many artistic standpoint. There's no question about it. But as a youngster, for me, you know, it was the eighth wonder of the world because it was the avenue to big leagues. And so when it was built, you know, it was the greatest thing in the world for me. I mean, even though it took away our playground, so to speak, because the areas around it, which became parking lots, were really our softball fields, our football fields, and so forth. So, you know, it was a great thing. But as you said, there was nothing really spectacular about it. And I think the whole nine yards on it was like, I mean, back in the day, it was like a $14 million project, which included land acquisition. So, as you can tell, there was nothing. But, you know, I mean, that was a lot of money in those days because they just weren't doing stuff like that.
Was there a lot of talk that the stadium was becoming obsolescent and the Orioles needed a new home?
Well, you know, really, that all started, I mean, it had started back in the 70s, really. I mean, they were the I would say the park was barely 20 years old when the so-called cookie cutter age was coming in, and multi-purpose stadiums were being built, you know, pretty much under the same, almost with the same blueprint, it seemed like. And that was, you know, that was on deck for a long time. I mean, the Orioles went through a period of from like 73 to 79 where they were basically up for sale. And, I mean, it was all during that period of time that there was all kinds of talks. And, of course, with the Colts threatening to leave or in the process of leaving, you know, trying to do something for both teams at the same time, you know, it just didn't seem like it was going to work. But I will say this, that the people that lived in the area, I'm sure that initially the people that lived there when Memorial Stadium was first built back in 1950, a lot of the people were against it. A lot of people that lived in that area were against it. I know that firsthand because I had newspaper around. I lost some customers over that.
Really? What was the opposition about?
Well, they just didn't, you know, the stadium that had been there for 25 years, which is ironically the age of Camden Yards right now, was really not that big a thing. You know, Navy played some football games there. There were a couple of Army-Navy games there. There were some high school games there. But it basically was not really used until the minor league park burned down in 44. And they made a makeshift diamond out of it, and then all of a sudden, as historians of baseball know, in 1944, the Orioles got into the Little World Series, which ended up outgrowing the World Series, and everything kind of took off from there. But a lot of those people, a lot of those homes that people remember from the old stadium, you remember those old gray stone homes that set up behind center field that the hitters used to complain about a lot of times? You know, at one time, those were like wealthy estates for people living out in the country.
Uh-huh.
And a municipal stadium actually was built in front of that. I mean, and that was kind of like the end of the road. You know, there wasn't much behind that.
I always found it amazing that when NBC would do the game of the week, or the Orioles, of course, were a constant presence in postseason those years, right, that when they took an aerial shot, and you'd see private homes like right there behind the outfield fence. It was crazy.
It was, I would say, probably, you know, that it was 33rd to 36th Street, so technically on by numbers, it's only three blocks. And I would say from the edge of the seats, I mean, I'm just writing a column now that's basically saying that I grew up in what we could call the suburbs of the right field suburbs of Memorial Stadium, kind of whatever it was like.
Yeah. Edward Bennett Williams, the great attorney, owned the team. He was a Washingtonian. Was there ever a concern for the club's future in Baltimore?
Oh, absolutely. I think that was absolutely. In fact, when he finally bought, you know, the thing people remember is that Ed Simon was initially the guy who was going to buy the team from Jerry Hofberger. And it, when it fell through, and EBW was kind of like his representative. I think he knew a lot about the negotiations. And when Simon stepped down, EBW kind of was the one that stepped in. And one of the famous headlines the day after he took over the club was Bye-Bye Birdies.
Wow. So
yeah, there was a definite fear element involved there, and that was in 79. So it turned out to be 5 years before the Colts left.
I was going
to
say, and then five years later, the Colts were removed overnight,
right,
and that left really a crisis of confidence in the city. And fans, I would think, were now clinging to the Orioles as their last connection to big time sports more than ever.
And there's no question about that. And the tough thing about that was also at a period of time when the Orioles were in really their first prolonged, you know, and a really serious downturn, I mean, on the field. So, there was a lot of concern there. I mean, I think that you know, it was a conglomeration of all the things that kind of fell into place together that it kind of made everything take off. I really do believe that. But, you know, then after that, of course, by that time, the times changed. Like I said, those homes that were built back there, those were 19th century homes, and there were people that lived there for a long time. But around the World War II, when things changed, that became a much younger neighborhood, and actually, those people grew to embrace the stadium and not go. So now, when the talk came about moving, I would say it was much more heavily involved in the people that did not want that stadium anywhere else except where it was. And it, by that time, you know, with parking for only about 4,000 people, it wasn't a whole lot. There really wasn't a whole lot to do there as far as renovation. It had been very hard to renovate anything there. So we got to have to see, and to do anything would have been really difficult.
Jim Hinneman is with us, the Baltimore Orioles team historian, of a beloved figure in the city of Baltimore, as we talk about the 25th anniversary of Camden Yards on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. So Governor William Donald Schaefer tells 50,000 people in Memorial Stadium on May 8th, 1988, that they're getting a new ballpark. And frankly, Jim, they weren't in a very good mood because the team had opened that season with 21 consecutive losses. So this was a light at the end of the tunnel.
It was, you know, that season was so bad that they started with 21 straight losses, and they were on the road. They arranged this great homecoming thing. It was not going to show that devotion to the city and back in the club and all this kind of stuff, and they were going to sell this thing out and get the thing. Well, they even screwed that up because then they won a game. Right. They won a game before they got home. And then when they came home, they were 1-22, I think. They did end up winning the game that day, but wasn't a whole lot that went good that year other than that. You're right.
And then he says, we're going to build the stadium for $110 million, which is nothing nowadays. And Lucchino, the team president, Larry Lucchino, who was brought in by Edward Bennett Williams, said, quote, "I've had one good original idea in my 38 years in baseball." And what he was proposing was preposterous, a new stadium with an old-time feel.
And, well, he stuck with that, you know, now whether it's his only thought. I mean, that's a great line in itself. But there is no question. I mean, you know, Comiskey Park opened the year before Camden Yards did, and it basically had the same architectural firm did the new stadium in Chicago. We were only, 2 years behind the Sky Dome opening in Toronto. So, you know, everything was, you know, and bigger and better, I guess, seemed to be the byword. I think, you know, one of the great mistakes they made in Chicago was that they double-decked their Sky Suites, which means that they have, like, I think they have, like, 144 Sky Suites there. And all that does is create a great the degree of angle for the upper deck was even higher than it would normally be. So it's a much steeper thing. And, you know, that was, a disastrous decision there. I mean, I don't really know how they deal with that now, because I think Baltimore has 72 Sky Suites, and a lot of those, you know, most of those probably go on a game-to-game kind of basis. It's not that many, are fully sold for an entire season.
Right.
It's just not, you know, it's just not practical for a lot of companies, I'm sure. So,
was it out in the press, Jim, much about that this revolutionary idea was taking shape in Baltimore? Did it get a lot of play that they weren't trying to outdo Toronto? They were going to try to outdo,
because there was a lot of controversy. I mean, there was the warehouse was the longest, most decrepit building of its kind in North America, probably. I mean, it supposedly was the longest warehouse anywhere in the country, but it was, you know, it had long been abandoned. It was a deserted area, and so there was a heavy consensus from a lot of people to tear it down, and so that was one thing. That was one decision that we made. The other decision was, you know, how do you fit the ballpark into to what is around it? Well, in all honesty, there really wasn't anything around it that you really would necessarily want to tie it into. So those were difficult decisions. I read a thing the other day about Janet Marie Smith, who was the lead architect on this thing, who did a fabulous job, said that there was a suggestion of a fan about having the bullpens elevated so that people could see guys, people warm up, something
right.
like that. And that was something that they incorporated into this whole design. So Governor Schaefer was adamant about the Camden Yards thing. He was really into the historical nature of that, you know, being the train station where Lincoln supposedly came through, and with the Gettysburg Address and all that kind of, all the history there. It's hard to envision that kind. It's hard to envision, you know, That kind of stuff. But now you look back, and now you look at everything in the Baltimore Harbor going east all the way out to 95, and nobody could have ever envisioned all that happening either, because it just, none of that was there. So there's just so many things that had to come together. The idea of the old-fashioned ballparks, I mean, was a great, you know, was a great thought, and it made a lot of sense in it being where it was. And again, the downtown factor is so heavy there. In other words, people thought downtown, nobody goes downtown. Nobody, you know, where are people going to park? And I remember a friend of mine in Toronto, they said the same thing. They said, when they were building the Sky Dome, where are these people going to park? And I remember asking the guy, well, where do they park? How many people drive to work every day? Where do they park? And, you know, are they going to stay there all day? And, so these things tend to have ways of working out that we can't really envision. I to be honest with you. Who knows? In the beginning, I know my family was still living in the old thing. They were really against downtown. But I think the first stadium that I really noticed being downtown and the ease of getting in and out of it downtown was going to the 75 World Series in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And it was easy. You know, I saw the easy access, the way cabs were able to get in and out. I thought, wow, they're right on the river. You know, I don't know why this can't happen, but, you know, you wouldn't be able to happen anywhere. Now, I was 1975. I mean, that was almost 20 years before, you know, by the time Camden Yards showed up, you know, how old is the new ballpark in Cincinnati now? So.
Right, since 1970. But when you look back on the land for Camden Yards, this was really, again, another example of urban blight, which was something that was affecting almost every inner city.
Yes, and it was right on the edge. I mean, of course, the rail tracks, and of course, the light rail was there. It was going in there. You know, those things were all there, but. You know, there was a lot that happened when all those things were being done, too. There's a commuter trains there from D.C. that runs there. So it turns out to be ideal, and it has worked very well. The people that live in the area have embraced the place kind of like the people that had embraced it at Memorial, too. The right. people that lived around Memorial Stadium did not want to see that come down, but. Ultimately, it wasn't going to work. I think pretty much everybody would agree with that now. Even though it's hard for a lot of people to accept, you know, there's something about being quaint and all that stuff, which I don't think Memorial Stadium was ever really quaint. I mean, if you ever sat in a 20th row downstairs, you know, you had some concrete pillars that were going to affect your seat, your vision somewhere. So it's just it was one of those cases where it's almost impossible to believe, but every single decision, it seems like, was correct.
People on the project were not allowed to use the S word, Jim, for stadium.
Right.
And
right.
And Janet Marie Smith, who you referenced earlier, a brilliant architect and urban planner, oversaw development and did such a great job that her scrapbook for the project is resting in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yes, that is true, and that park thing that was one of Larry's deal. That may have been his best original thing. If it was not going to be a stadium per se, it was going to be a ballpark. So, I remember it. I can remember, you know, those days very vividly, and also him talking about the Sky Dome being the eighth wonder of the world. You know, we're just trying to build a little ballpark. You know,
do you remember the first time you saw it?
You know, I used to drive by it a lot. You see it from the outside, obviously. I remember being, we went the year before, I guess, the year it opened in 92, so I guess it was 91. We actually went inside and we're in like an area that was going to be, I guess it was going to be a pitching mound or something, but you really, really could not envision the finished product from that point. I mean, you just saw the shell was up, kind of the warehouse was there, but you kind of wondered about a lot of it. What I do remember is driving by on Russell Street constantly. You could see it there, and you could see there the blending in of the area. You could see that, but I can remember asking Jan and Marie about. What about Russell Street? And she did say, well, Russell Street's going to move a little bit, you know, but so that was all part of the rearranging of the scene. And I said, it looks to me when you drive by there that there's going to be foul balls falling in the middle of Russell Street all the time. And not really envisioning the fact that the field was actually going to be 16, I think it's 16 feet lower than what is street level there.
Right.
So, and the funny thing of it is, as high as, if you remember Memorial Stadium, as high as that appeared from the outside, there were more than a half a dozen or so foul balls that did go out of that ballpark. And there has never been a foul ball to hit Russell Street. There's never been a foul ball to go out of this ballpark. Nor has there ever been a home run to go to the upper deck. I was telling somebody the other day, maybe that's the only flaw in this whole stadium is there's no upper deck home runs. There's only been two that have reached the mezzanine, And, of course, we know the warehouse still hasn't been hit under game conditions.
Right.
But hitting the third deck is going to be a lot tougher than hitting it. Somebody's going to hit the warehouse one of these days. But no, I don't think anybody's ever going to hit the third deck.
Jim Henneman is with us as we look back on Camden Yards and its 25 years opening this week, Camden Yards. And I remember being at the final weekend of Memorial Stadium with the Detroit Tigers. And I remember you on that final Sunday, final day of the year, the Orioles were going home, and the emotional ceremony that there was. You were in a tuxedo. I think it was orange, and I hadn't seen.
No, it wasn't orange, but it was an orange.
You had an orange bow tie. Is that right?
Yes.
I remember
like
you had an orange, but you had an orange bow tie, and it was very emotional. It was to the music of Field of Dreams, without any announcements, and out came all the shortstops, and out came all the second basemen, and all the pitchers, and so on. And I remember how emotional you got. Because this was more than just a ballpark for you. This was a place, this was part of your life.
Absolutely. I remember that vividly. I had tears in my eyes, and I told, I talked to some people, and I said, you have no idea. I said, I grew up here. I can almost see the street. I couldn't see my house, but I could almost see the street that I lived on. There was a lot of emotion there, and I had been, I'd seen the very first game there, and then as it turned out, as I've told many people, when Memorial Stadium got built, the big leagues came here. My first objection was to try to figure out how many tens I could get in there without paying, I succeeded at that probably better than anything in my life.
The construction of Camden Yards took a little less than 3 years as these old abandoned railroad yards became a ballpark unlike anything that anybody had ever seen before. Opening day, the President of the United States, Bush 41, George Herbert Walker Bush, throws out the first pitch. Rick Sutcliffe, signed as a free agent, pitches for Baltimore, shuts out Cleveland and Charles Nagy 2-0 in a game that took only 2 hours and 2 minutes. I love that. They started 12-2 at home, and it was such a hit immediately, Jim, that everybody forgot about Memorial Stadium.
That is true. I mean, not everybody, but there. It's funny. I mean, I know people that and it's just like people that were really into Memorial Stadium will not drive by the old site now, even though they've done a beautiful job of creating a senior housing development, and they have a state-of-the-art YMCA there and some nice little fields and stuff like that. But there are people that had attachments to Memorial Stadium who probably have gone on and probably never stepped inside the Camden Yard. But for the most part now, I mean, I think that, there's not many, let's face it. I mean, you had to be my age or older, really, to have really appreciated the beginning of Major League Baseball here, so there's not anybody left that hasn't really adopted Camden as a unique. Like somebody said, everybody always talks. That's the first thing they talk about now, and I said, thank God, because for years that's all everybody. The first thing everybody asked about was the block. So, it's a whole lot better to talk about Camden Yard.
You were quoted as saying, it's like going to Disneyland. When I first saw Disneyland, it happened to be on its 17th birthday, and it looked like it had opened yesterday. That's what it's been like at Camden Yards. It does not look that it's 25 years old.
Well, the ball club and the stadium authority, they get a lot of credit for that because nothing stays the same forever, and that is true. I was at Disneyland, and it did happen to be on the 17th birthday, and I was astounded then because I knew that I had a brother that played in the Angels system for a couple of years, and they their spring training headquarters was not very far from what became Disneyland, and that fascination and there's. I give a lot of these ballparks credit. They've taken a lot of tips from Disneyland. They follow their routines and keep it clean and keep it up and keep fresh, keep it new. And it's hard to do. I mean, you know, especially when you're saying I'm trying to make something that looks old to keep it new. But this is now the new, the old is the new, or new old is the old new. I don't know how you say it, but it worked.
But it's worked also in this sense, that with good teams and bad teams, the building has become iconic. That the team drew $3.5 million in its first season, which was 40% more than the last season in Memorial Stadium. It drew $3 million plus the first 10 seasons, excluding the strike season. People were going to this ballpark just for the experience of being in the ballpark, regardless of the play on the field.
Right. And obviously, over, you know, when then you go through that 14-year stuff, that wears thin on the local residents. Let's put it that way. I mean, so after a while, you know, that's going to wear off a little bit. But the one thing is, the attraction to out-of-towners has not worn off at all, I don't think. I still think that there are people that look forward to coming here, you know, that have it on their, you know, there's still a lot of people have it on their bucket list. I mean, you know, so that's a, you know, that's something that puts you in pretty good company, even though it's, you know, depending on how you want to look at it, it's either the ninth or tenth oldest ballpark in baseball now.
How about, isn't that amazing? The 10th yeah. oldest stadium in use right now.
Right. I think that's counting at the Trop as a younger stadium, which is really, as we know, not true. But it's younger as far as Major League Baseball is concerned.
And it's been home to so many amazing moments. Of course, Cal Ripken breaking Gehrig's record on September 6, 1995. Eddie Murray hits his 500th home run on the same date a year
yep.
later,
yep.
on September the 6th, 1996. Pope John Paul celebrates Mass there on October 8th, 1995, a month after Ripken breaks the record. The Cuban national team plays and beats the Orioles in 1999. So many great. Do you have one particular moment that stands out?
Well, you know, people always ask me about a particular moment from like the history of the club, and which one I always look at is my favorite, and I always tell them the very first game, because as a teenage kid that was the most thing, and really baseball wise there were a lot more things happened that you want to remember in Memorial Stadium than have happened at Camden Yards to this point, but there have been a lot of great things. I mean the Cal Bays stick out. You know, the playoff game. I mean, the second playoff game against Detroit a couple of years ago was unbelievable. But you know what? I think I'm the first guy. I still think I go back to going in there and watching that first game and this great ballpark that has since become, you know, like it's like the epitome of. They can say what they want about it, the others, and I'm sure it's not the best at everything, but. It has. I mean, to me, it's every bit as much, and will be to people, the generations behind me. It's going to be every bit as important coming into Camden Yards as it is going to Wrigley Field or Fenway. I really believe that.
And I agree with you 100%. And I'm glad you didn't mention in August of 07 when Texas came in and beat Baltimore 30-3,
right.
which was the most runs that the team had scored in 110 right. years. And a guy actually got a save in that game. Cameron Lowe.
Yeah, the same in the game, and a lot of people forget that the Orioles actually scored the first three runs.
Exactly right. Crazy. Cameron Lowe, I met him in spring training a few years ago. I reminded him about that. But what Camden Yards did, Jim, was it changed the way we think about the fan experience and the role of architecture in sports in this country.
There's no question about that. There is absolutely no question about that. And a lot of people get a lot of credit for that. And a lot of people stuck to their guns. I mean, Larry stuck to his guns. He pointed out, you know, Schaefer, the governor Schaefer was a downtown guy. He was a Camden Yards guy. Larry was a guy that, you know, wanted to stay with the idea of the old time ballpark. Somebody, you know, a lot of people had to get credit. And there was a battle over the warehouse. And I mean, you know, now we can hardly imagine this stadium being here. How would Larry kill me? Being here. Without the warehouse. I mean, it's almost not imaginable, really.
Jim, thank you so much for your memories. So appreciate it. So that'll do it for Jim Henneman and myself on MLB.com. If you were on the move, thanks for the ride. And thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.
Thank you.